Good evening. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Bright Khumalo, and tackling your questions in studio tonight with me is Graham Koerner from Koerner's Perspective and Rikus Reda from PSG Wealth in Sandton. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS at 413-392 or email us at stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Graham, Rikus, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes, we saw how the markets performed today, and obviously it has to do a lot with what happened yesterday in the U.S. with Jerome Powell and interest rates and his stance on that. So, what do you guys think means for equity markets going forward?
Well. Just before we went on air, I was saying that the top 40 equally weighted index over a five-year view is down about 10% if you ignore dividends. That sort of sets the scene. It's been a bloody horrible market. There's no other way of putting it. And of course, in the top 40, you've had things like Naspers and maybe to a degree Richemont helping to offset that. But it's been a very, very difficult market. I think there's a growing frustration in South Africa about the lack of political progress.
Yeah, especially to hamper growth.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the EFF sort of taking Pravin Gordhan on, it's feeling a little bit chaotic at the moment. Interestingly, though, the rand is strong.
Yeah.
Our 10-year is just over 8%.
Wow.
So as anxious as we may be about the future and maybe debt to GDP going through 60 and if the ratings agencies and some others are right, going to 70% in the next few years. Bond market's not showing that, having none of it. And I think part of it is the fact that if the Fed is going to start cutting, 8% possibly in a relatively managed inflation environment, people feeling maybe we should be playing in the EM debt. But the equity market looks awful. But we believe that this is the kind of market that people should be buying into. But don't expect performance over the next 3 or 6 months. It's just, difficult.
Yeah, and Rikus, the first question we received actually was, we saw the Woolies numbers, on top of that, they wanted you to comment on the Woolies number and the fact that, is this like the first signal that we wanted to see in the turning around of the consumer in the South African market?
I think it's the first signal that we're seeing in the turnaround of Woolworths.
Exactly. But, not the consumer or the economy.
Yeah, no. One consumer company who's been through a difficult time and having a good set of results at last, in no way signifies that the South African consumer is under less pressure. I mean, you've just got to take a look at what's happening with banks and their results and the rest of the consumer market. And we are in a difficult space.
Yep.
And going back to what Jerome Powell said yesterday, interest rates can only take you so far, never mind the local economy, but also the global economy, where there's a slowdown in global growth.
Yeah.
Lots of reasons, not the least of that being the insane tariff war that Trump has instituted, which has really thrown the cat amongst the pigeons. So there has to be fiscal reform, both here and overseas, because, as I said, interest rates will only take you so far.
Yeah, another question we received from one of the guys on Twitter. He asked us, what do we think of Sasol? Because a couple of weeks ago, we came and said we liked Sasol at a certain level, and it's breached that level. It's actually gone down. It's below around 325. That's where it is currently. And quite frankly, a lot of those guys bought Sasol, and they're wondering what's going on. And surely all of the news with the LCCP, the Lake Charles project, is priced in at this moment.
The uncertainty is not, firstly. Secondly, the question mark that the market now has over management, because I'm reluctant to call the thing, because just before they put out that second announcement a few weeks ago, after saying literally 2 months before, we're on top of it, no more cost overrun. So there are big question marks, and it's not the fact that there was an overrun. $1 billion, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
I did the calc on a couple of the small and mid caps that we like, and you could have bought five of them and you would still had $1 billion worth of change. That's the quantum of the value destruction. Having said all of that, The rand is still, call it, around 14. It's been there for a while. The oil price has gone from a little over 60, 62 to, call it, 67. There seems to be a lot of tension in the Middle East.
Yeah.
When I look at this thing, I say at the core is still effectively a Synfuels business that continues to make money. They've got hedges in place. The year end is gone, so we'll probably find those hedges being replaced, probably at very similar levels to what they were. So if you get a collapse in oil, or you get a massive rally in the rand, the earnings should still be relatively there. So my best guess is for braver investors, this is a really great opportunity to pick this thing up.
Yeah.
What I will say though, Bright, is 5-10 years ago, people said, you just buy Sasol and you put it in your bottom drawer. It's like Anglo American and Bidvest. It's not. If
not
you look
anymore.
At it over a period of 10 years, it's been in this kind of 350, 550 range. And value has been destroyed through Lake Charles. But my view is that Lake Charles will contribute. Okay. Yes,
okay.
There's a lot of debt, but the IRRs are still
positive.
Yeah. And even if it's only $200 million, it will contribute this year. So it looks to me as though there are a lot of people that have decided they want out of it, but it's still very, very widely held, and I think it's at least on a year or 2 year view quite visible.
Okay, do you have any opinions on Sasol?
I do, and Graham has sketched the fundamental part very well, and I've got a technical view on it, and I've got a technical target on it, which is way below where we are currently. I'm not going to say where it is because people are going to accuse me of actually driving this thing's price down. But I have absolutely no comfort in the short term, and by short term I mean for the next 6 to 12 months going in right now. The downside momentum and the negative sentiment towards the company is just too dangerous to go and take a stab at it right now. And one must also, you know, we concentrate on Sasol because we know it. But if you're an overseas investor and you say, okay, I want to go and buy an oil company or a chemicals company or a combination of the two, as Sasol is, you know, there's lots of others you can go and choose from. So it might not be the Forbes favorite coming through when the cycle for that type of company does turn. I mean, we've had BASF coming with a profit warning yesterday, 30% down in earnings.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you want to go and even, you know, It's not a nice sector to be in at the moment. Is Sasol the best of a lot? I don't think so. Not with that destruction of cash flow return on investment.
Yeah, it makes sense. Maybe this is a little more exciting. Mohammed Saeed is asking us, which platinum and gold stocks will you suggest buying into right now?
Okay, so on the platinum stocks, we're not generally holders of the direct single commodity, although the PGM basket is more than a single commodity. But we don't right now hold platinum and gold directly. It struck me today, and I'm a bit dim, so these things catch me by off guard. But, you know, you got platinum at a little over 800, and you got gold now at 1,400. I have a fundamental concern about what. If you look at the patch that the global economy has been in, and you think how strong trade has been, you've seen the automakers still selling lots of cars with cat converters, et cetera, I'm asking myself, why is the platinum price not considerably higher? And the South African producers still make most of their money out of platinum. So I have a question mark. I don't understand it. They've been the star performers over the last 6 months. But I'm fundamentally concerned about the long-term prospects for that, assuming there's not like a, you know, hydrogen cars and fuel cell-driven cars, which I don't think is it. I think it's going to be an electric car market. Gold stocks, interestingly, I don't hold gold stocks generally, but I think Anglo Gold, if you look at the guidance that they gave, if you're a gold bull and you look at what they're talking about in terms of their cost guidance, and very much outside of South Africa, they've got one residue really. And if they can manage in those other geographies their cost base, that's looking interesting. But generally, I think the gold price has taken off. I'm a little bit weary of that. And the platinum stocks, no, I don't like them right now.
Oh, okay. That's a very interesting thesis. Another question we're receiving here on the email is by Fatai Amau, is asking about two companies, which is British American Tobacco and Mondi.
American Tobacco, I know a lot of analysts are saying, you know, it's not the end of the world as far as legislation is concerned, being against tobacco companies in general. the sort of trying to shift to heated products away from your normal lit tobacco houses.
Well, innovative. That's going to be, and
they're all going to say, well, you know, these guys are still going to print cash going forward, which might be true. But I was thinking in the call this morning, you know, even if it is fundamentally undervalued at the moment, and you might get a run up, I really do think that tobacco companies are a dying breed. If you want to, you know, I think there is a definite shift from the image of smoking, specifically under your first world younger generation. It's simply not there anymore. So there's a fundamental change in how these things operate, and it might be valuable or undervalued in the short term, but
maybe it's undervalued for a reason.
That's the sort of feeling I have, and I must say, I've got nothing against smoking. I'm a smoker myself, but look how old I am. You know? And
the alpha generation won't be keen on smoking. That's for sure.
Precisely that.
Mondi, it feels to me as though it's looking for the next cue. Mm. They've done phenomenally well. They invested well. They've operated the plant very, very well. But I think if you're looking at a company that might be vulnerable to a global trade war, that would be one.
Okay.
And you can see it in that chart. It's come off quite significantly. And that's what I was trying to say. It feels as though it's looking for direction. So if you just look at a 25% fall, you'd say, well, that looks interesting. But there are actually a hell of a lot of companies that are down 25, 30%. If I can just go back to British American Tobacco, I think it's really cheap right now. I think the cash flows will be there. But I tend to agree with Rikus. I think it is a dying industry. Doesn't mean to say that a utility can't actually generate returns over a period of time.
But what's the catalyst to make it a utility, like be like a high dividend payer, essentially?
Yeah, which I think they could be. I think the innovation into heat, no smoke and vaping is not, it's not big enough to offset the significant fall in stick sales, which is really what's been driving the weakness. We actually are getting our British American Tobacco exposure through Reynet Investments because it's only 50% of the NAV now. So it's almost a case of there's optionality. If it does become a cash cow and they can almost milk it over the next decade, you could get very nice flows. And you've got some very interesting assets there and a pretty decent discount. So if you're interested in BAT, I'd rather buy a Reynet.
Okay, but it's a very interesting argument, that one, but we'll come to it after a break. It's time for a break. Keep sending through those questions via SMS at 41392 or email us at stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's take a look at the market picture, starting off with the USA. The S&P 500 is basically flat, you know, up about, you know, 0.3%. We've got the NASDAQ, which is down about, you know, 0.24% there, whilst the Dow, which is priced by price, that's up about 0.5% there. Still in studio with me are Graham Koerner. Oh, sorry. when we cross over to, you know, Europe on that side, we've got the FTSE 100, which is down about 0.28%. The CAC around in France is down about the same as well. And the DAX is down 0.33%. Still with me in studio today is Graham Koerner from Koerner's Perspective and Rikus Ridders from PSG Wealth in Sandton. I'll start with this one here, which actually is talking about Uber. You know, they don't understand if it's a good investment or a bad investment because the company continues to, you know, it's not really competitive. That's what they say, and it's hemorrhaging cash. And they don't seem to have good employee satisfaction. I think that's the argument. Do you guys look at Uber as an investment?
Well, okay, so I'm old-fashioned. I don't like buying companies that are probably never going to make a profit. Just call me silly that way.
I mean, that's a fair argument.
It could be worse. I think there's been a lot of excitement in the U.S. around the unicorns and the opportunities. And I think if you take Uber as an example, I think it was late cycle bull market listing. Yeah, I think whether it's the competitive landscape, whether there are other ride-sharing technologies that are going to compete, I don't like it. I think to me, the principle is great. Mm. But if you can't at a point in time convert it, like a Facebook did, yeah, or like a Google did, where you do all the hard work, you build the critical mass and you build the offering, and then you start making lots of money. I don't see that in Uber myself.
Lucas, it's a tough one.
I think Graham touched on the one thing that bothers me, and that's your barrier to entry. It's not difficult to write an app, and if you've got enough people providing the service, enough people
using it. You've got the Middle East backing you, you can start your own riding hailing company, essentially.
Basically. So obviously they've gone into Uber Eats, which is what they should sort of do. But again, you know, there's fearsome competition there as well. So what's going to distinguish them from any other ride sharing or food delivery service? I'm not sure. And if I'm not sure, then I can't quantify it, therefore I don't know.
Yes, so here's a very hard question, which I got, you know, from a guy called Hot Knot on Twitter, is asking which company, you know, with, I don't know, which is going to benefit from the fourth industrial revolution and is looking into investing in those companies, basically.
Well, I'll tell you one that we added a little while ago is Micron. Okay.
Micron, chip maker.
Yeah, but okay. They've got good product, market leading efficiencies. So if you talk about fourth industrial revolution, you talk about smart cars, you talk about lots more smart devices, the programmers are becoming lazy. Suddenly you know, every device has got, you know, 64 gigs and I think companies like that are dumbed down beneficiaries of that. So I would almost play in that space. It's quite difficult to pick the next big technology winner. I'd rather say, yeah, play in the guys who are likely to benefit from an explosion, but they actually just make money. And you look at Micron, it's obviously, yeah, more, yeah, recently it's run quite hard. The results look a bit better than I think the market expected. And also there seems to be a bit of a bun fight going on between the Japanese and the Koreans, which is playing into their hands. So I would look at a company like Micron, quite frankly.
Yeah, you know, it's what Graham says. It's almost the old analogy of, if there's a gold rush, don't go and buy a gold claim, go and buy the shop that sells you shovels and pans
blue
and things
barrows
like that,
and
which is basically what Micron,
yeah,
is.
Okay.
In other words, it's what gets used. But if that...
But what are your picks in that space?
I really don't have, because there's going to be things which are going to do astoundingly well and things which are not going to do well. I don't know enough about it. There is something called the Kensho, Fourth Industrial Revolution Index, which is a black box program devised by this company that basically has, it's an index of companies weighted according to how much they are taking part in this revolution. Signia has got a fund on that. I'm not
counting
that.
But
it's called the Fourth Industrial Revolution Fund.
Yeah, but they've still got FANGs in there. It's like the usual suspects.
Yeah. They have.
Yeah.
They have, but it's a very broad-based fund. So in that sense, you're not picking a specific winner, you're part of that move, and you might not do as well as the star performer, but you're not going to invest in something which turns out to be a dud.
Yeah, Michael Myers says here, retails and telecom shares have been under pressure, which may as well continue in the short terms. Are Mr. Price and MTN a buy for the long term?
Mr. Price, I think, again, we've spoken about the consumer being under pressure, so I don't think any of the retailers are a great bargain at the moment. Yeah. Mr. Price is probably one of those that will survive through this slump when we get going again. So at a decent price, yeah, I wouldn't mind having that in my portfolio. MTN,
yes.
I've used this argument before. We are sitting in South Africa, which is essentially an emerging market, and
yeah,
and our portfolios are chock and block full of emerging market shares, because by definition we have South African shares in our portfolio. Now I'm going to go and buy MTN, who's playing in emerging markets,
which gives you just more exposure of the same thing.
Of the same thing, as a telecom company,
yeah,
great stuff. But you know, all that associated risk. Do you really want to go and
spread it even further?
That's what I mean.
Isn't the theory is you get more diversification, it lowers your risk?
Yeah, but okay. My view is that the cell phone companies have been becoming utilities. But the thing with the utilities, you've got to have something that somebody wants. So you look at OneWeb, for example, who's looking to launch satellites and offer effectively free global internet. Yes. Elon Musk has got a similar sort of mission.
And his satellite, one satellite, was launched already. Yeah,
absolutely. You've got cities in South Africa who are saying, you know, we've got these Wi-Fi hotspots. So, you know, you actually don't really need to buy data. You don't need to buy voice anymore. So, I've become quite bearish on them. I think if they're able to pivot quite quickly, as a lot of companies have in the rest of Africa, in parts of Asia, in South America, into financial services in a meaningful way, and can start doing the true ICT convergence, then I'll relook at it. But I think right now, the days of selling airtime for 2 rand a minute and 150 rand for a gig of data, it's a very, very quickly dying business model.
Okay, Rikus, you're gonna like this question. Palisa, the Stockfell girl on Twitter, asks, she wants to know your views on dividend-paying stocks.
Oh, they're great.
Better than Uber.
So which ones, you know, come to mind when you think dividend-paying stocks?
Not necessarily the high dividend yields, but
not the aristocrats, just like good-paying dividend
payers. That's my point. I like companies that have a consistent dividend growth, although the dividend yield might not be that great, because that's normally a type of company which is sort of a mid-cap that turns into a blue chip consistent dividend payer once you get into retirement. So that's the kind of company I'm focusing on, and one of those that come to mind just off my head at the moment is Altron, which is in a whole turnaround situation. And I'm quite sure that considering where that possible earnings flow is going to go through, that dividend growth will come with it.
Do you have any, Graham?
The banks right now are looking very, very good on dividend yield. You're getting sort of 6%ers there. So, and I think the cap ad ratios are good. You know, they're not going to go out and lend aggressively and have to impair heavily. So I think the likes of Standard Bank, Absa, even in Investec. But also, I mean, I know we've been sort of slating the retailers, but, you know, companies like Fushini, for example, and City Lodge is not a spectacular dividend yield, but you get a lot of upside optionality as well. Yeah. And I think to Rikus's point, you must be careful about buying the dividend yield.
Just for the dividend. Because
people were buying MTN and Sasol for dividends and Anglo American for dividends.
And look where we are today.
Yeah. So I would rather look to the companies that will give you that 15% earnings growth and maybe even better dividend growth.
Okay, I'll start with you, Graham. Your stock pick for tonight?
Well, I don't know what I'm doing anymore, so I'm going to go. At least I'm honest. I'm going to go with Ethos Capital, and I tell you why. It gives you something different. You were asking about diversification, Bryant. I think it gives you something different. If you look at a lot of the investment companies, the likes of Remgro, for example, they haven't been great allocators of capital, if you have to be honest. These guys have got a 30-year track record of delivering IRRs of over 20%.
Because they decide what the IRR is, but that's a conversation for another day.
Well, yes and no. If you create a fund and you harvest it and you return the cash, then that is real.
And your stock pick tonight?
Also bottom of the barrel stuff, but I like Richemont. Two reasons. The Swiss market is pushing to new highs. Richemont will hopefully go with that crowd.
Yep.
Secondly, considering where we are in the market, sort of slowing global economy, it is relatively stable because of the stopping of the luxury market.
Yeah,
And I also think, unlike the tobacco companies, they are selling products which are still
aspirational.
People want to wear it and be seen to be wearing it. So even though the age of your consumer might change, I don't think, you know, as long as it's glitters, people will want to have it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for that. Thanks to my guest, Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective and Rikus Ridders from PSG Sandton. We'll take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening. I'll start with you, Graham. Your stock pick for tonight?
Well, I don't know what I'm doing anymore, so I'm going to go. least I'm honest. Eh? I'm going to go with Ethos Capital, and okay. I tell you why. It gives you something different. You were asking about diversification, Bryant. I think yes. It gives you something different. If you look at a lot of the investment companies, the likes of Remgro, for example, they haven't been great allocators of capital, if you have to be honest. These guys have got a 30-year track record of delivering IRRs of over 20%.
Because they decide what the IRR is, but that's a conversation for another day.
Well, yes and no. If you create a fund and you harvest it and you return the cash, then that is real.
And your stock pick tonight?
Also bottom of the barrel stuff, but I like Richemont. Two reasons. The Swiss market is pushing to new highs. Richemont will hopefully go with that crowd.
Yep.
Secondly, considering where we are in the market, sort of slowing global economy, it is relatively stable because it's topping of the luxury market.
Yeah,
And I also think, unlike the tobacco companies, they are selling products which are still
aspirational.
People want to wear it and be seen to be wearing it. So even though the age of your consumer might change, I don't think, as long as it's glitters, people will want to have it.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Thanks to my guests, Graham Corner from Kerner Perspective and Rikus Readers from PSG Santon. We'll take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening.